you please rise for the pledge of allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Call the meeting to order. Trustee Kopisch, here. Trustee Genrich, here. Trustee Green,
here.
Trustee Vandenhoven is here. Trustee Dart,
here.
Trustee Gass,
here.
Trustee Zeller,
here.
Are there any proposed modifications to the agenda this evening? Trustee Gass?
I would propose that we move 8 up to 6A.
To where?
6A.
Are there any other suggested modifications? Is there anyone here who would like to see an agenda item moved up or down on the agenda? Maybe to move 6A to 8? Is there a motion to approve the agenda as modified? Trustee Gass, second. Trustee Zeller, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Announcements?
I just have a couple of them. I got a letter from the Green Bay Fire Department, Metro Fire Department, and they are going to do their Fire Training Academy again this year, the 2013 Fire Ops 101. It will be Saturday, September 7th, beginning at 8 a.m., and it's pretty much an all-day training session for anyone just to show them and learn about what firefighters do, and I believe Trustee Green, you have gotten this in the past. So if anybody is interested in going to that or has that day open, please let me know, and we can get you signed up. So Saturday, September 7th, starts at 8 o'clock. It's at NWTC, and it is an all-day event.
I would encourage, if you've never been, it's a worthwhile experience. I mean, they give you a lot of hands-on, so it gives you a different perspective.
I went up to the firehouse one time, and they put me in the fire suit. And I was like, better eat your Wheaties that morning because they put you in your little ringer.
So anybody interested, I just need to know before Monday, September 2nd. So if anyone's interested, please let me know.
Thank you.
And then up on the counter, there is an update for you on the Hilltop Apartments. But I'll just quickly go through it for you. As you may or may not know, they did the final inspection of the Hilltop Apartments on Monday, August 12th. The investigation was complete. The state fire marshal will be putting together a issue a statement, basically, in 1 month on the fire and what they feel the origin of the fire was. So at this time, the building has been released to the insurance company. They no longer have to leave it stand. It can be removed. Because the investigation has been completed. I did talk to the owner to see where they were at as far as demolition of the building. They are out to bid right now because we have gotten some calls from different companies. They figure the demo will begin within 2 to 4 weeks, and hopefully the building will be down shortly after that. So the process is going right now, or at least the bidding process is going right now to remove that building. As you know, there's been much interest in that site. I've received calls from developers in regard to redeveloping the site. I've received calls, and you have also received calls probably in regard to the property being changed into a park facility. So we've got both ends of the spectrum, and we'll see what happens with it. I have not had any discussions with the current owner in regard to what he plans to do with the facility, but I have talked to several developers that are looking at would like to rebuild on that property. On the bottom of the memo, it just talks about the current value of that property. It's listed at just about $2.3 million, which includes the land at about $250,000, and then the improvements for the bulk of that. As far as taxes, there was a concern about a loss of taxes this year, but we will not feel the impact of that building not sitting there until 2014, the taxes at the end of 2014. Because taxes are paid on what's on the site in January of this year. Just for your information again, the total property taxes on that property, about $46,000. And the village is $13,800 of that. That's all I have on the property right now. I will certainly keep you updated as the process continues and they start to demo the project or demo the building and where we go from there.
Has the information on the demolition been communicated to the neighbors, or will that be handled some fashion?
I have not gotten anything out to the neighbors directly. We certainly can get something out to them. The people that have called, I have told them, I've talked to a couple of people that call on this property, and I've let them know that this is what the process was and this is where we were at.
Any other questions? Trustee Green?
I was just going to add, taxes to us of $13,855 with the number of police calls. One of the questions I have is, does that amount of taxes even cover the police calls that were to that property in the last year? So Tracy was going to find that out, and I just, are they even covering their costs with how that development was? I think that's a good piece of information for us to have before we consider redevelopment and the type of redevelopment or the clientele we want that to attract.
Any further questions or comments? Trustee Gedrich?
Will this get posted on the village website or something to this effect so people could see it without?
We certainly could put it out there. I know the press has contacted me. I sent this out to the Green Bay Press Gazette, and they were thinking of putting some article out in regard to that, so it may be in the paper tomorrow as well.
Anything further?
One question. maybe Mark could address this, if you know. I mean, in response to what Lynn was saying, do we have anything in the books in terms, ordinance-wise, in terms of if there's an inordinate amount of police calls made to a particular location that can be separately billed for that?
Maybe Rick can address that. We do have nuisance property ordinance in place for that type of thing.
That would fall under the chronic nuisance ordinance that the village does have. I think in the past, the property managers have always been very good to work with us. If any chronic nuisance issues come up, typically we wouldn't go after that unless it's like the same apartment that's happening over and over. But usually once we contact the managers, they're pretty good about getting things taken care of for us. So I haven't gotten that far with them since I've been here.
Thank you.
And what, can you give me a sense of what would constitute a chronic nuisance?
Under your alley code, I believe it's 7.14 is a chronic nuisance code. It's 3 police calls within a year at a certain residence or property. So for the apartment complex, I would treat it as individual apartments. If we're having problems over and over with the same people, that's when I would take action on that. But with a building that big, you're bound to have some police calls. So in my mind, I guess I didn't, I know there's more than 3 calls a year there, obviously, but they're usually different people, different apartments, so I treat it as a case-by-case basis like that.
Sure. Anything further? One other, were you finished, Tracy?
Yes, I was. Thank you.
One other announcement. We have the option, in addition to the name tags that you all got a couple of weeks ago, which were free, that's on the village, we have the option of purchasing shirts, polo shirts like this, for the board or anyone else who might be representing the village. I've always found it useful at functions to have some way of identifying where you're from. The name tag helps, but they're $19 a piece, and there are, I think you can choose from a couple of different colors. There's some instructions on what to do if you are interested on this book, and I'll just pass it back and forth. There's a contact name and a number that you can call here. Any other announcements? Okay, item 4, the presentation by Extenet with regard to the proposed cell system in Alloway. Can you state your name and address, please?
Members of the board, good evening and thank you. My name is Timothy Asta. I'm the Director of Municipal Affairs for Extenet Systems. Our corporate address is 3030 Warrenville Road in Lisle, Illinois. That's spelled L-I-S-L-E.
Craig, did you want to say something?
Well, I was just going to mention that if you recall, this was a topic we discussed at Public Works and Board, the cell system expansion within the village, and that the board has already acted on it, sending it back to Public Works to go ahead and complete a utility permit for the project and so forth. This is the presentation that you requested in terms of covering the details of what that system is and answering the questions that you had. So that's what this was for this evening.
Thank you.
Not sure if everyone can see that. Thank you for the opportunity to be here tonight. I'm very excited to introduce myself, Extenet Systems, and the proposed telecommunications network for the Village of Alloway, for the City of Green Bay, and also for the Village of Bellevue. Let's start with who Extenet is, first of all. We're a telecommunications utility. We're regulated by the Wisconsin Public Service Commission, very similar to a phone company, but we don't provide landline service to homes. What we actually do is we build fiber optic networks for the benefit of the wireless industry primarily, but any other telecommunications utility that could benefit from our fiber optic transport, those would be my customers. In this case, we're actually talking about a network that has some antennas on utility poles we're going to see here in a moment, and it is for the benefit of the wireless industry. In this case, we're talking about Sprint. Can everyone hear me, by the way? I think I'm going in that a little bit. Okay. The type of technology that we're talking about is distributed antenna system. So simply put, what we're proposing, and we're doing this in other communities in Wisconsin, we're actually proposing to use existing utility poles, attach very small antennas onto the top of them, small equipment boxes, and then interconnect them with our fiber optic system. Throughout the Village of Alloway, we have four locations. We're going to see those in a moment. But essentially what this system does is it supports what the carriers already have. Most of us here have smartphones. We've probably seen a number of cell tower applications. You've seen antennas on your water tank and billboards and things of that nature. The industry is evolving. That's not enough anymore. In many instances, the demand on football Sunday, football Saturday, there are certain areas that have sufficient coverage, but there are major capacity challenges. So the wireless industry contacts a company like Extenet and asks us to essentially build a telecommunications network and then provide that additional capacity to them. I apologize, this might be slightly difficult to see on the monitor here, but what we're going to see over the next several slides are a series of photographs indicating what we're proposing within the village. In this case, I actually conveniently put a picture of Camp Randall behind here. This is in Madison. We're building a network there in Madison and Pittsburgh. But essentially what we're proposing is to use existing structures. As I mentioned, we're a utility. That's where we're supposed to go. We operate in the public right-of-way. We don't go to private property. We're not going to, you know, place towers. We're actually, as a utility, required to put our installations on existing Wisconsin Public Service utility poles. At the very top, you see a small antenna. Some cables will connect down to some equipment boxes, and you'll see some better photos here in a moment. This unit here is called a node. We're actually proposing four of those in your community, eight in Green Bay and one in Bellevue currently for Sprint, but I'm pretty optimistic that we're going to be looking at some more installations in the future. I think Alloway is a prime community for this type of technology. Here's another photographic simulation of what we're proposing here. The antenna has been designed to roughly be the same diameter and color as the utility pole. It's not meant to be a visual deterrent to anyone driving down the road. And our equipment boxes that go on the pole are meant to look just like an alpha box that the cable TV company puts on all over the place. again, we're looking at four of these in the entirety here in your community. I'm going to continue to show a couple of photos here. These actually are actual installations where the sun is out. When we took those other photographs, actually it was overcast and rainy, and our photo simulations are poor because of it. Same situation here. This is what we're talking about, antenna on the top, equipment box on the pole, and then they're connected with fiber optic cables. We're not proposing the use of city-owned streetlights at this point in time in your community or in Green Bay or in Bellevue. But in the city of Madison, we actually have a couple of areas where utility poles don't exist, and the city will actually allow us on their streetlights. The reason why I show this, and I actually met with Bellevue earlier today, is I think communities need to start thinking about the ability to leverage your assets for third-party attachers. Now, you're not going to make a ton of money per pole, but there's an opportunity if Public Works has a 5 or 10 year plan to replace some streetlights. Maybe the wireless industry could pick up the tab on those poles. You own them, and then you have some Wi-Fi hotspots throughout your community. I think we'll all agree cell phones aren't luxury items anymore. They're really essential services now, and we're trying to find just the best way possible to deploy this stuff. And existing infrastructure is what everyone has been pushing us to, and we're hoping that we're meeting that challenge. Some of the feedback that we received after we had a meeting here with the village administrator and public works director was, you know, how did ExteNet pick the areas? How did we get to the specific poles? So I want to take a moment and actually kind of talk about the design process here. As I mentioned, my customer is the wireless industry. In this case, it's Sprint, but we're also talking about Verizon, U.S. Cellular, et cetera. And the whole process starts where the wireless industry contacts me and says, hey, we have a challenge up in the Green Bay metropolitan area. We say, okay, well, look, where is it at? So they actually give us an outline. This is a what we call a search ring, a polygon. And just within that goofy polygon, they have capacity issues. And they say, ExteNet, solve our problems there. We're fine everywhere else for now. We don't have budget to do anything else. But within this polygon, in 2014, we need to have a network solution. So this is how we start. Because we're a utility, we need to use existing utility infrastructure. So then our team uses our GIS databases, and we contact Wisconsin Public Service, who we have a structure support agreement with. And we ask them, where are all your existing utility pole lines? Because we're not proposing to set new poles. We're using what's here. So we then map all of the existing above-ground utility poles. I see several of them out the window right now. And we map them within the contour. And we call that, you know, that's the aerial plant. That's what we're going to try to use. And then from there, our radio frequency engineers can actually use Google Maps and Street View. I'm not sure if anyone's had a chance to do that, but you can actually put your little guy on your computer screen, put him on the street, and in 360 view, actually look at the street light, look at the utility pole. And from there, they actually will pick out the utility pole structure that we want to attach to. Now, WPS doesn't allow any antennas on a pole that has a transformer, any external conduits, a double circuit pole. So there's a number of poles that we just flat out can't use. So we are able to, from a desktop, identify how we can try to solve the challenge within this polygon for Sprint. And they give us their criteria, and that's how we go about it. And then once we have these theoretical locations, our field engineers actually go out and physically confirm that we can use those poles because we need to apply to WPS. They do a structural analysis. They approve the site. And then we come to the village for our permits. Once we have the design verified, then we can actually do a RF propagation plot. You may have seen this. Those colors essentially indicate how those cells are performing. I think you can probably notice right away, these little bitty antennas don't do a heck of a lot. Maybe a quarter of a mile. These aren't intended to be high power. These are actually more analogous to a Wi-Fi router you have in your home. But because of the way this is designed, it actually gives the carriers that additional capacity to recycle their frequency. And then, you know, on football Sundays, we're all downloading clips during the game. This is actually what they need in order to meet those capacity challenges in there. So this is essentially how this network is going to perform in that area, but what's missing is all of the other existing sites that Sprint has had for years and years. That's not shown here. This supports all of that, but for the sake of the conversation, I just wanted to show you what's going on inside the Polygon. Now we're going to look at your community directly. So we have these little circles indicate a utility pole location. As we see in Green Bay, we got 8 of them. Down here in Alloway, there's 4. In Bellevue, they're kind of getting shortchanged a little bit right now. They're only getting 1. But that's not to say we won't be back in a year when Sprint has some more money to expand throughout the rest of the community. But what you see here is the aerial fiber optic cable that we're proposing. There's actually no digging anywhere in the network, which is pretty shocking. Normally we have to, like in Sheboygan we're tearing up streets because there's not above ground utility in a lot of instances. Thankfully here, there's wooden poles all over the place and we can use them. So it's a very, you know, non-invasive installation and everything is on existing utility poles. I know one of the questions came out, how come you're not covering the entire village? Well, Sprint has a budget. They have priorities. This is 2014. I can't promise you that we'll be back in 15 for the rest of it, but I do know this. Every network we've built, we've expanded, and we operate for all the industries, so I'm pretty confident I'll be before you again telling you that Verizon's now interested, AT&T's not interested, and possibly even U.S. Cellular. Do you have a question, sir?
How much do you work with the strategic plan, the comprehensive plans of and the projected budgets of municipalities? For example, we might be bearing some of our utilities as we do these road projects.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that organizations like yours would want to know that, so
absolutely,
that you could tell your potential customers, look, if you're going to do it, now's the time to do it so that we don't have to go and dig this stuff up after.
It's very common that a lot of municipalities are taking the aerial infrastructure and going underground.
Right.
What we have to do at that point in time is cooperate with the mutual build. You know, we're just another utility entity in your right-of-way.
Right.
So when that happens and everyone bears the cost, we're part of it.
Okay.
Now, from a fiber optic perspective, though, that solid line, going underground is perfectly fine. Now, it's cheaper to go aerial for us because we're not having to cut into your streets and things of that nature. But that doesn't pose any challenges. What happens is when the utility poles go away, that's when streetlights become necessary. And we have a number of communities where they're basically saying, hey, we want them on every one of our streetlights. It's fantastic. We can't get there just yet, but it's something to consider. But yes, we as we become a utility, you know, registered in your community, we're hopefully made aware of that and we participate in that actively. Sir,
how are the nodes powered? Do you use the AC power from the pole?
The poles are powered directly from Wisconsin Public Service at the pole. Every one of the poles will have its own meter, so we are charged just like a home service.
Okay.
Excuse me. And then there's also a disconnect switch on the pole. So if any technician needs to go up there, they can actually shut off the commercial power and go up. And so there's no appurtenance onto the ground. Everything's on the pole, but yes, it's powered directly from WPS. Yeah.
Is there a technical part of your presentation where you describe how these things actually work relative to a regular cell tower?
Well, not necessarily. I'm a city planner, so getting into the technical stuff, I would be above my head. So we're actually just going to talk in more general terms. But as far as this network works, when we actually go back, when we looked at the schematic where we saw the antennas connected with the fiber optic cable, this actually terminates at an existing cell tower site. So all we're doing essentially is we're branching off from that site and we're augmenting that system. In many instances, the towers and the water tanks and the billboards where the antennas are 150 feet up, they still have coverage. That's not the challenge. It's in between areas where the capacity is just shrinking down at certain times of peak AM, peak PM. This essentially augments that system that allows you to have not only the data capacity, but in many instances, now this is actually working in your basement and it's a lot closer to the user. So I hope that answered the question, but it's not very technical in the response.
So it basically reaches out so that you can it can cover more areas that aren't currently being covered by the towers, and it adds capacity? Because calls get dropped, right? If there's two, you could be standing really close to a tower, but if there are too many other people using it, you're not going to you're going to get dropped, right?
Correct. Now, this is, again, less about coverage, and it's really all about capacity. Okay. Because sending and receiving calls, that doesn't tax the network at all. It's Facebook.
Sure, yeah.
It's that type of stuff. It's downloading clips during the football game. That's where this stuff comes in. It's really only about the capacity challenges. Yeah.
Although...
don't we have places in Alloway that where you just don't get very good coverage?
Oh, sure.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. But and I know that was question was coming, but please...
Yeah, we have parts of our village that sending and receiving calls is an issue.
Who's your carrier, by the way? Primarily U.S. Cellular, I'm guessing, up here?
No, mine's Verizon.
Okay, Verizon.
And they say the top of the hill is best. Mm-hmm. I'm two houses off of Webster, and mm-hmm. I do okay, but people with other coverages don't. And all of us, I'm very confident, I've received several calls from people who, they can't get coverage in their houses. So.
Right.
Okay, so if I'm hearing you right, this isn't going to help our coverage situation at all. It just helps the volume of
if you have
information
Sprint,
getting through.
If you have Sprint, you will notice a significant improvement.
In coverage or in volume?
Well, in both. But in this case, they have, it's less of a coverage issue. Again, it's more of a capacity. But the point of your coverage question, if you're in your basement, you know the signal doesn't go through concrete. It'll go through a glass window. That's why a lot of times interior rooms and basements and stuff, your phone just doesn't work. But when you're actually much closer on a utility pole near your home, that signal is a little bit stronger. But this system doesn't help Verizon just yet. Now, we can expand, and we're marketing that to Verizon and AT&T and U.S. Cellular. But what we're talking about today, currently Sprint is the only tenant that will be on this network. But our business plan is to have multiple carriers on this network, so it makes all the sense in the world for us to try to get those additional carriers, which means I probably would have to build some additional sites for Verizon because they may have other challenges different than Sprint.
So Sprint customers, though, are going to see better, they're going to get better coverage.
They'll get both. Okay. If they're within this area, they're going to see both. Absolutely. Absolutely both.
So, but I think what we're maybe misinterpreting a little bit is that for Sprint's sake, they weren't looking for better coverage. What they were looking for is capacity.
Correct. But you still will get both.
So
thank
it
you.
It could solve the other problem for other carriers.
Indirectly, it does that as well.
Yes.
Correct.
But that's not what they were looking for.
Correct. They basically said, here's our challenges, here's our needs, here's our requirements, go fix it. But everyone can have a different set of circumstances. But yes, you're going to have improved coverage. It's just that wasn't the initial objective. But you'll still have it.
See, our residents will ask, right?
Oh, they're yeah.
This stuff, so what, and then they'll say, if they don't get better coverage, they'll say, well, wait a minute, what happened? And
well,
we
here's,
need to know how to respond.
Let me be very honest about that. If you don't have Sprint right now, you're not going to see any improvement.
Right.
And this is what happens when the private market invests in the infrastructure.
Right.
It's based upon budget, it's based upon priority, and it happens over time. Yeah, something that we necessarily can't control. We can just try to facilitate it as best we can. That's all we can do.
These were at one time called boosters, and that conjures up like they have particularly strong signals or something, but that's not the case.
No, right? These are actually these are like 5 watts. These are tiny.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can different cell providers operate out of the same antenna?
Yes, they can. Yes.
So if Verizon wanted to come in, they had the same needs, Sprint and Verizon could run out of the same infrastructure.
Correct. Now, what we would do... Notice on the pole here, we have an antenna. That's actually a passive device in the fact that we can have 4 customers on that antenna, all of them operating concurrently. What changes is we would need to add another small box. This bigger one is actually a backup battery. So in the event the commercial power is disrupted, this still functions. So if Verizon were to come along, we would just add another box to the pole. And they're pretty small, about a suitcase, roughly about around that size, maybe a thicker laptop. So absolutely. And again, from our perspective, Extinet being a for-profit company, that's exactly what we're hoping to have happen, is that they will use the exact same installation. Yes. Now, chances are they'll come in and say, you know, looking at the entire network, all the 13 sites, we can use 5 and we want to build 7 more. That's probably more realistic, but absolutely we would hope that they would try to co-locate on that installation.
And then did you say that the signal from here, you get connected basically through this node? What is it called? A node, a booster? What are these things called? The
unit,
antenna at the top, right?
The antenna. But this whole unit is called a node.
A node. And then does that node go through one of the larger towers that
yes.
we see? In the
correct.
So how does it increase capacity if it's all going through that central tower anyway? If it only that central tower can only handle a certain amount of data, isn't it just sort of creating another on-ramp for that, and it's going to get blocked up when it gets
a lot of it is data backhaul back to the macro site where the tower location. Also, you have limited spectrum. And carriers are now being forced to recycle spectrum. That's very difficult to do from a traditional site. That's actually one of the benefits of this entire technology is we can actually sectorize those antennas and actually focus power just in one area. So, for example, if we have a node by the football stadium, we can actually take capacity from other nodes and actually push it all on that one site for Football Sunday.
Oh, okay.
So it's actually a software-driven.
Oh, all right.
But yeah, there's a lot of offload going back to that macro, which is then connected to the switch, which is how you connect to the normal landline situation. So when our phone rings at home, everything's connected.
So this happens. Does it happen automatically? Does it? So literally, these things can be moved remotely to where you want, or they
software.
Wow.
Not physically moved, but yeah,
right.
Software, absolutely. These can be sectorized, and if it would please the board, I would be happy to we'd come back, and I would actually bring an RF engineer, as I call them, the propeller heads. I'd be happy to bring a propeller head here to have that conversation.
Yeah.
But it's highly technical. It's actually very exciting, because not only are these systems connecting to the existing macro cellular networks, these are connected to airports, shopping malls, sporting venues. We have a number of in-building systems where the Florida Marlins play in the new Brooklyn Nets stadium, and the indoor system is connected to the outdoor system. So customers, when they're coming and going to the event, as soon as they're getting there, they're already getting apps on their phone. And anyway, I'm not here to discuss whether that's right or wrong. It's just kind of the reality of the world right now.
Have you ever tried to make a phone call during a Packer game at the stadium? There are 70,000 people taking pictures and sending them to their friends.
Exactly. That's. I spent about a year and a half up in Montreal. Their hockey is the same here as football. During game time, it's insane.
Is it sort of like an energy grid where they shift their energy to one?
I'm not sure if I know enough about energy to confirm or deny that. It may be, theoretically, but. The reality is this is a very expensive technology. If Sprint could come in and build another tower, they would. It would be a lot cheaper and easier for them to do that. Maybe not easier from a zoning perspective, but, this community, Sheboygan, Madison, and Fitchburg, this is pretty exciting in Wisconsin. So it's a pretty neat opportunity, I think. The last thing I have here, and again, I'm more than happy to answer questions, but we are genuinely grateful for the opportunity to invest in your essential infrastructure. We are committed to building a world-class telecommunications network, not only now, because we're significantly investing in your community. We plan on being long-term partners here. We hope that, in the future, when you're going underground, we're part of all that, and I hope we have a whole bunch of nodes we have to relocate because we've been so successful. I always want to state to the community, there's no cost. We're not asking anyone to invest. This is not a municipal Wi-Fi, and I'm sure we've all read about those 5 years ago, 8 years ago, where everyone was going to do municipal Wi-Fi. They don't work because there's no money in it. This is the same kind of technological concept. It just so happens that it's the carriers that are behind it as opposed to free Wi-Fi. So think of it kind of technologically in that same way. if we get to the point in the future where you may actually get approached by U.S. Cellular and say, hey, we know you have this technology, we don't want to deal with ExteNet for whatever reason, we'd like to go on a city-owned streetlight. It's an interesting opportunity for you folks to explore in your 5- and 10-year capital improvement plan. Maybe you're not interested, but I always think it's appropriate to at least consider, you know, kind of where things are going. By having greater competition, I think not only are you reducing prices, I think there's a number of folks that actually are tethered to their homes because they don't, maybe they can't afford a phone or whatever it may be, or their phone doesn't work very well. This is an essential device now, and I think a lot of people really rely upon it for their daily goings and businesses and things of that nature. So anytime we're improving those essential infrastructures, I think there's always a lot of benefits to the public. As a city planner in a former life, I think we would probably all agree this stuff looks a lot better than the big antennas on towers and water tanks, and I would be willing to venture a guess that most of us don't even look at utility poles. We drive right by them. And once we have these installations, I would encourage you all to go out and try to find them.
But we know where they are.
Yeah. We still have a hard time.
As we talked about, there's coverage and capacity built in. We can accommodate multiple users, and I want to leave you with one last point, and this is not something that I'm trying to, you know, oversell here, but the fact that we're putting a backup battery on the pole, you saw in the photographs we have a small box and a bigger box. The bigger box is an 8-hour battery. We've actually had a number of instances where a storm event down in Houston during the hurricane, I think it was 2006, we were able to, when everything was wiped out, there was no commercial power anywhere, not only did we have 8 hours of battery backup on those poles, we were able to pull generators up there, and emergency responders were using our system until, you know, commercial power was restored. So it's not something that you folks have, you know, as a an asset in your community, but it's an indirect thing that's there. There was no cost to the village, and it's something that we find that a lot of police and fire, they use their own cell phones to as backup communications beyond their two-way radios. So just another thing I think that's important to let you folks know. But that's all I have. It was an honor to be here tonight. Again, I'm more than happy to entertain questions, or if anyone here in the crowd has questions for me, I'd love to answer them.
Well, you should know, this came up with the board, unbeknownst to us, Craig had some conversations with you or your company, and we really, at least I'm really buying into what you're saying. We need better coverage and more capacity in the village of Alloway, and our residents are sort of become kind of a joke around the village on how bad the reception is. And so, we're glad you're here. We're glad that you're here.
Let me make another comment on that, because, you know, I've been with ExteNet now for 9 years, and there was actually some situations back in 2004, 2005, where some communities out east, prominent communities like Alloway, were saying, we want our citizens to have broadband services. We don't want towers. So they actually hired a consultant, went through a municipal RFP, and actually hired us to go out and get the carriers to come onto this network. That doesn't always work when the carriers are forced into that direction. The reason why I bring that up is the carriers are proactively coming here. I think it says an awful lot about your town. I think it says a lot about the region. I think that of all the networks we've built, we've expanded all of them. So I hope that we do have that opportunity. There's no guarantees, but if I was a betting man, I would bet that I'll be back here before you with some additional stuff to talk about another year or so.
What does it say up on our village that the carriers are proactively coming here? Aside from, we don't have very good service.
That's why they're coming.
You're important enough. You're important enough. That's what it says.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Have a good evening.
Are you going back to Lyle tonight?
Pardon me?
Back to Lyle tonight?
No, I'm actually going to stay in Sheboygan and cut up the drive a little bit. But I had a meeting in Bellevue, so it worked out pretty well.
Oh, great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Public appearances. Is there anyone who'd like to speak this evening? You can speak on any item you wish. We can only take action on items listed under a business section of the agenda. Yes, sir.
I'm Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue in Green Bay, LA. I'm here because I'm on the historic with the Historic Preservation Commission on their recent intensive survey. I disagreed with how the report was prepared and presented to the public, and I had requested that after doing a lot of work on it that my name be removed from the document, and it was. On a technical term, the report is what's called an intensive survey final report. And this is the one that was done for Green Bay 25 years ago. And every month at the Brown County Historical Society, we go over this thing and we wish that we had a better report. Okay, so these things last forever. There's a 25-year, 30-year shelf life on them, and they cannot be changed. That's not what you were told. On a technical term, the notice that you gave the public was that you were voting on an initial survey, not a final survey, and I don't think that the public was fully aware of what you were voting on or what was contained within the report and how that report impacted their future property values. So all I'm asking today is for you to review the procedure that was done on noticing the public on this report and decide if you had indeed voted to approve a final report or an initial report that was indicated on your minutes. And it's a very big deal because there's tax advantages that go along with being in historic districts, and if you're not in a historic district, it's quite a bit different than if you are. And if you are in a historic district, under LOA laws, you can be told what kind of door you can put on your front door, what kind of window you can put in, which is in complete opposite of what was told at the meeting. So there's there was a meeting in which the consultant went through that and did explain how some communities came down very hard on their residents, and there were no minutes from that meeting, but I have my notes on it, and she described how residents were very upset with the local designation procedure on where the local committee can decide if they like the windows and the doors and the dormers or whatever somebody wants to do on their house. So I'm a property rights advocate, I'm a realtor, and so I think that the public should have a right to know what's involved, what's included in that survey, and whether you intended to approve an initial survey that was noticed or whether you intended to approve a final survey like Green Bay did. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Tracy, do you have anything to add? My recollection of that meeting was that I learned a lot that night, but that we were approving this initial survey because the finalization of that survey isn't within our jurisdiction. That's done by the Historical Society.
The document that you approved was, the document is called the Initial Architectural and Historical Survey of the Village Valley. That's what the document is called. It doesn't mean that that was the initial document.
That doesn't mean it was a draft. That's what
right.
It,
that
right.
was the final document.
But my understanding is the reason it's called initial, that's the title of it, is because we're not putting the final approval on it. We're forwarding it to the state, who then, I don't know if they rule on it on behalf of the feds, or I can't remember what that process is, but I asked the question and he explained to me exactly what the process was.
I think the reason it's called the initial is because, as Joe DeRose from the state had said, this is the first step in it. This is giving the village a path, some direction to go ahead and continue on with the survey. And you're right, it has to be approved by the state, which they've already gone through it all and approved everything that was in it. It will be up on their website, all the homes that were picked out from the Village of Alloway. So the document itself, that is the title of it, and that's why it has initial. That's what our grant was for, to do that study for us and get us the information so we have a good start and a good building block to continue on and say, okay, these are the homes that potentially go to the National Register. These are the districts that we are picking out within the community. So it is a start, but the report itself has been finished. Although if there's changes to it, anybody with documentation can go to Joe DeRose, and he will look at that, and that could be put up on the website under that particular property if there's information that comes to view or additional information that can be provided. So it is a living document, and changes can be made to it or additions made to it as we move forward in as we go down the path with historical preservation.
Right. What's more concerning is Mr. O'Rourke's question as to whether or not we were accurately depicting what we were doing when we approved the initial survey, and whether we were aware of the process that would happen after we approved it, and it's not going to come back here. So in that sense, it's not an initial survey. And in my mind, it was, after I asked all those questions, it was very clear. But I would recommend to the rest of the board, if there's any doubt in your mind as to what we were doing last time, and you think that we did not accurately depict the agenda item as to what was going to take place that night, then you probably should have brought it up for this meeting so that we could potentially rescind, but you should see me and see Tracy as to what our next steps might be. But in my mind, it was pretty clear. Yes, sir.
And I like Tracy, and I don't like the contradictor. And I've been made the bad guy. I'm the only one standing up for this. But the official word that you approved was not initial, was intensive. An intensive, final survey. That's what you approved. It's not initial. It's intensive, final survey. And it wasn't done well.
Okay, we'll take this under consideration. I recommend to the board that you do the same, and we'll decide where to go from here. We obviously can't do anything about this tonight. Trustee Darn.
Is it possible to ask a question, Mr. O'Rourke?
Absolutely.
Jim, that survey, that green book that you have, is it the same sort of survey, an architectural survey, or is it something different, like a different kind of historical document?
It's an identical survey.
Trustee Guest? No? Sorry.
Did you see that survey?
Yeah.
That was not the
last. Anything further? Is there anyone else who'd like to speak this evening?
I can just show you just so you can see, compare the title pages. Intensive final report. Intensive survey.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak this evening? Yes, sir.
Just quickly about the Heritage Hill, or not Heritage Hill, Hilltop Apartments. Before you move in any direction, you'll let the community know, the people that live in that area know as to whether you're going to give it to another developer to redevelop something. Because we still are very interested in a park. And there were some good points brought up tonight about flood cause down there and who paid for them. And I'd venture to say we probably paid for all of them. So.
Yeah, we will definitely keep you informed as we move forward.
I can work with you, Ryan.
I'm sorry, could you state your name and address?
Pat Duchato. I live on 552 Hilltop. We were here last June to talk about, you know, the concerns that we experienced over the last 20-some-odd years and what we really want down there. We do not want rental property. We want a park and green space with two outcomes. Number one, the green space to separate the permanent residents from the rental residents, and also it'll provide a nice park for our kids so they don't have to go down and across East River down to the park down there. It's kind of a dangerous road, and without sidewalks in this community, it's rather dangerous for our kids to take the streets. So.
Thank you.
Trustee
Bass?
Well, just in response to Mr. Duchato's comment, I mean, the property is private there. I mean, yep. There's only so much we can do. I mean, we'll work with any developer to make sure that, you know, that the neighbors' considerations are taken account of and make sure that they comply with the ordinance. But I just want to make sure that there's no misunderstanding. We don't know it. I mean, we can't do anything without the owner's consent.
No, we don't. We don't own it. That's correct. But when you say work with a developer, you know, what we want developed there is a park. We don't want another rental property, and we don't want condos or anything like that built on that site, which would mean that the village would have to move forward and possibly purchase that site to put a park there. And, you know, I just want to make sure you're thinking in that direction also. You know, I don't want the door to be shut and say, well, the developer will work with you. That doesn't help me anything, because I don't want what the developer has to offer.
And historically,
sure,
is it?
A couple hundred people down there don't either. So.
It's historically in our comprehensive plan to buy a property that's adjacent to parkland. This one isn't. But it's not unheard of for us to purchase property that goes up for sale that's adjacent to parkland to increase our park space. Whether this is the time in history economically to do that or not, it's not best to be determined. But.
And I realize we're not flush with money in Dalloway, but in the same token, there's a lot of programs out there that you can draw from, grant money and things like that, and we hope you look into that before you make final decisions.
Trustee Zeller?
I have no more comment other than what Mr. Gast was going to make that point.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak? Hearing none, we will move on to item 6.
Okay.
Action regarding the adoption of Ordinance 2013-09, amending Ordinance 2011-18, the establishment of a plan of PDD for lot 1 of 51 certified maps 178, located on Libel Street. Want to hear from Tracy before I entertain a motion?
Basically what this is the ordinance for the approval that you gave for Mr. Macko's property across the street with the extension, the two-year extension, and then with the escrow required. So basically it's putting that motion and that approval into ordinance form, which is part of requirement for the PDDs.
And Ann was here
yes.
A month ago or so to talk about that. Trustee Zeller?
I move to adopt Ordinance 2013-09.
As submitted. Okay. Is there a second? Trustee Gast?
I'll second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Item number 8. Action regarding the approval of a noise variance permit for the Cerebral Palsy Outdoor Music Concert. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gast?
I move to adopt the noise variance permit.
Is there a second? Trustee Kopisch seconds. Discussion?
I know Mr. Sindergaard is here from the CP Center.
You have something to add?
Good evening. Nice to be here tonight, by the way. Nice to meet Steve, who serves on our board, but I've not had the ability to meet yet. But I'm John Sindergaard, the director of the CP Center. Brand new as of about 5 weeks ago. I just want to share with you a little bit more about the event. We're going to entertain a young gentleman on the 14th of September from 1 to 4. His name is Justin Hines, and he's a young man who has been stricken with Larson syndrome, which is a condition that causes him to remain in a wheelchair. But he's a wonderful international talent. He has opened up at the Olympics and has participated in a number of other very, very big venues. And so September 14th from 1 to 4, we're going to have a concert that will be available to both the community as well as other nonprofits in the area. So we would invite all of you to attend that event. I just want to make one brief comment regarding the noise. I would just suggest to you that the nature of the concert will be more along the lines of a James Taylor or a John Denver than an AC/DC or a Quiet Riot. So,
I'll forget it then.
We talked with our neighbors and we assured them that their windows won't reverberate and will be in good taste. So thanks for your consideration, and we look forward to seeing some of you there.
Thank you. Any comments from our other visitors? Further discussion amongst the board? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I will abstain. Okay, thank you. 8B, old item 8B, action regarding the approval of a noise variance permit for Resurrection Catholic Parish, the Autumn Festival picnic. Is there a motion with regard to this item?
Could anybody?
I'll make a motion to approve. Is there a second? Trustee Genrich, discussion? Done this before? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Item 7, action regarding the adoption of Ordinance 2013-08, creating Chapter 27, registration of escorts. Would you like to hear from DEO Alatna before I entertain a motion? DEO Alatna?
Since we last looked at the ordinance a couple weeks ago at the last board meeting, it has gone to the attorney's office. My understanding, they reviewed it. It's in line with other communities, and they didn't have any problem with it. So since then, I don't believe any other changes have been made.
Any questions? Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gass?
I'll move to adopt the ordinance.
Is there a second? Trustee Genrich, second. Discussion?
Just so it's clear, I'm not in favor of escorts, but I'm in favor of regulating them if they come here.
You brought this issue up.
Well, it's not, yeah.
Too late.
No, because
let the record reflect.
Yeah. No, as we discussed, I mean, without an ordinance, there's nothing we can do. And we know that they're there someplace.
Do we know it, Trustee Gass? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The gavel back there? Item 9, action regarding the approval of the crossing guard position description. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gass?
I'll move to approve.
Is there a second? I'll second. Discussion? I've got one small suggested change. I don't think is worth an amendment, but job purpose, I just recommend putting children and other pedestrians, since there could be folks from a CP center, or there could be adults who are accompanying their children, that I think it's the person's job to get everything across the street safely, and other pedestrians, as mentioned throughout the document thereafter. So just in the job purpose section, include other pedestrians whenever children are mentioned. Will you consider that a friendly addition to the motion, Trustee Gass?
I will. I will be friendly.
All right. Are there any other, is there any other discussion or suggested changes to the job description? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item number 10, action regarding updating ordinance 6.12, the keeping of animals. Would you like to hear from Mr. Roberts first, or do we have a motion? Trustee Green?
I would move to amend the ordinance per memo from Mark Roberts.
Okay. Is there a second? Trustee Gass?
I'll second.
Enthusiastically. Discussion? Trustee Green?
This was going to come back this fall anyway. The reason we had had a health check in the original ordinance was because we were one of the first ones passing them right on the heels of Green Bay. And at that point in time, bird flu was prevalent, and people were really worried about sick chickens coming within the village. That has not borne out, nor has the whole bird flu epidemic borne out. Also, I'd like to point out we have so many more complaints regarding dogs than we have ever had regarding hens, that I think this is a good a good change to the ordinance. But then there was one other aspect of this ordinance that was pointed out by several residents, is you do not have to have your neighbor's permission to have a pit bull or a dog, which we get most of our complaints from by far. However, you do have to have surrounding, to get a permit for hens, surrounding neighbor's permission to get your hen permit. So that's another piece of this ordinance that I know several members of our residents would like to see gone, because hens have borne out to be in the last few years absolutely non-intrusive compared to our canine population. And don't get me wrong, I really like dogs, but that really is who we have the complaints from. So I think this amendment to this ordinance is the first, is a great amendment. I just want to make you aware that I think there'll be others coming.
Again.
I mean, no comment on the substance of the amendment, but just, you know, I'd just like to thank Mark for, you know, because he's the one out there trying to enforce mm-hmm. these things. And what I'm seeing with this and other things Mark has done is when he sees a problem or something that just doesn't make sense in terms of enforcement, you know, this is a nice way to address those things. I mean, he comes up with the solution and
yep.
and tells us what it is, and procedurally it just makes it easy to adopt, and I'm glad that Mark's keeping an eye on those things. And we're getting, you know, tweaking ordinances to make them work a little bit better and more efficiently.
Well, I have some help from Debbie.
Thank
and,
you.
Also Trevor and her intern, she did some work on also.
Well, congratulations to the team.
How many chicken licenses do we have?
Hens, no roosters.
So I mean, the license, how many hens, whatever. How many people have
five
hens?
Yeah, not many.
Five in the village?
Okay. Not one complaint. One complaint? Mm-hmm. Oh, that must have been lately.
Yeah, she had 16 chickens.
Oh, boy.
Oh, okay, but we've had not one complaint of people
See?
Being within
That's
their
how it
licensing.
Starts.
We actually had one complaint that went on. The lady never got her. She didn't have them registered, and the neighbors were complaining.
Yeah.
And we went check, she didn't have them registered. And she went to go ask the neighbors. They all said no, so
yeah.
she didn't
know. But the people who've been through the process, we've had no complaints on people who are doing this appropriately. However, how many dog complaints have we had in the last year?
Yeah, but dogs are a little more prevalent. How many of those dog
right.
complaints are for unregistered dogs?
Well,
too?
Exactly. It's the people who aren't following the process seem to be the main issue on all of it. So, yeah.
I understand where you're going and that there might be other issues coming back from the board with regard to this. I just think it's a good idea for us to keep it under check for now and see where it goes.
However, the health checks...
Right,
really
the health checks I don't
know.
Have a problem with. I don't think that's necessary
yeah.
anymore. But just
yeah.
the other aspects I'd like to keep in place right now. We'll have those discussions as we move forward. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Roberts has been busy. Action regarding the approval of the Animal Control Humane Officer position description. Is there a motion with regard to this item?
You should look at the one that's on the calendar. There was a change on it.
Highlighted in green.
I'm not writing green.
Mark, is the only change what's highlighted in green?
Yes, we added...
From what's in the packet, right?
Right. That was one thing that we were...
And there was some spacing on the one you got in there that was off a little bit, so this one is set up a little better. So that's why it may look a little different, but the verbiage is identical except for those two spots in green and green.
And this is a brand new PD. We've never had one before. We've never seen one before at all.
No, because we've always contracted.
Right.
It's been a contracted position. This is the first time it's been.
When did they start, though? They started a little while ago.
Maybe about 2 months ago.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I hadn't been forgetting an approval of a position description already a few months ago, and this is a change to that. Okay. Trustee Green?
Move to approve.
Is there a second? Trustee Zeller?
I'll second with a suggested modification, if possible. The position qualification doesn't say anything about having a valid Wisconsin driver's license, and I think that they're that they are traveling to all these to these calls, so I would suggest that be added in the position qualifications or knowledge, skills, and ability section, and that the driver's license be required, and also do we have the ability to check the driving record of this employee as they are a we have a liability for this employee now because they're an employee. So I would feel better about having a reviewed driver's license, valid driver's license. Do we have the power to do so with the DEO to run a driver's license check?
Being that's part of a background type investigation, I don't think would be a problem. I would double check with the sheriff's office. I know in recent months they've had more and more issues coming out with us releasing any information from that we get from DOT, even on accident reports and stuff like that. It's all if you go to the sheriff's department, you need to get an accident report from something you were involved in. They redact all the other driver's personal information. So apparently there's quite a few laws regarding that the DOT has really started coming down on us before, so it would be something I could double-check on, but I think it would be okay.
We're doing this retroactively for two individuals, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What do they do with the pizza delivery places? Does the person just show their ID to the employer for the driver's license to the employer, or how do they? Do we have to go through a whole background check to do this, or?
Well, I would think
background checks, but I don't hear you guys asking for my driver's license when I got here.
Required for anybody else. And you have to drive around a lot.
And you have to drive on.
Is any of that covered under the requirements of a Wisconsin State Humane Officer to get that certification? Do you have to have a driver's license, or?
I'm not sure.
But maybe it's covered already.
Well, and okay, I'll get back to basics. Anybody driving a municipal vehicle should have a driver's license, and we should know that. I mean, that's on the municipal insurance policy.
Driver's license,
so,
Mark?
Yeah.
Now we have everybody's driver's license.
So we had just approved the crossing guard, and the crossing guard position description didn't have a driver's license requirement, but I thought maybe that person would go to the assigned corner without a vehicle.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be
right.
A requirement. But in this case, it really is a requirement
right.
Of the job duties. Plus, we have an employee relationship with this person, and
yes.
If there's some enraged animal in the vehicle, certainly they are accomplished at doing this, but I'd feel better about having a background check on the driver's license. And
yeah, what would happen if they hit someone while they were driving on behalf of the village to pick up an animal and they don't have a driver's
license?
They're
in our employment.
Their insurance covers.
No, our insurance.
Yeah. Because they're our employee.
We are insurance, and if we didn't even we didn't verify that they had a driver's license, we could be in a whole heap of hurt.
On their application form, they put their driver's license down, and we do, and I got to double check that we did them on this, but typically we do a background check
on employees and includes a DL check to make sure it's valid and if they've had any issues with it. We definitely do it on our, you know, full-time or part-time permanent employees. I'm not sure if we do it on our animal control people or not. So that's something we could certainly do, and we do it on other employees and check their DL.
I don't see a downside to putting it in the position description as a requirement of the job. I mean,
so, Lynn, will you?
Oh yes.
Will you take that to be the first? Yeah. The motion is amended to include the valid possession of a valid Wisconsin driver's license. And as an aside, that we would still do a check of that license.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Okay, another issue that I think we need to decide on is one of the green items that's highlighted is who should the person report to. On one hand, the person is probably going to be working most closely with Mark, and that's why it's listed there. But there's also a question mark because Mark isn't here every day, and do we want a situation where his official supervisor is not in the building or at the place of employment every day. Now, granted, these people aren't here either, but...
Well, Tracy takes a day off, and people still function.
Right, but this is a pretty consistent basis.
What's gone so far is they called me. They have my number on the weekends. They actually called me, let me know what's going on. We've already talked to them. That I need to know if there's something that I'll have to follow up on. I do come back to work. So they've only had to do it once. It was 2 weekends ago. They didn't call me on the weekend. Let me know that they had a nuisance dog in the neighborhood. Just let me know.
And there can be, I can understand there's a working relationship, but that doesn't necessitate that there's a supervisory relationship. So to me, they're two different things. You can work very closely with a colleague, but that doesn't mean that you have to be supervising the colleague. And are we going to be doing performance reviews on these? They're employees now. Are we going to be doing performance reviews, and then if Mark is the supervisor, Mark is going to be doing the performance review. And so I just want to be very clear as to what we're stating when we put it in the organizational structure the way that it's listed on here. Trustee Zeller?
I'd be fine with reverting back to the village administrator as the report, the direct report. If you feel that would be a better arrangement with that person here all the time.
I'd like to hear from Tracy and Mark too. I mean, there's a reason that it's changed on here like this, and there's a reason there's a question mark. So obviously you thought about this and you thought about the pros and cons of it, so I'd like to hear what your take is on it.
Well, we talked about it. They're going to talk to me before they are Tracy about everything. And I'll bring attention. I'm also a supervisor over 20 guards also, and I'm not here every day when they're here.
Every
crossing guards. I'm their supervisor. I'm also the cadet supervisor. And they have my number. If they need something, call me. And I also have it's direct and non-direct supervisor. Tracy's the backup supervisor. It's up to you which moment. I've got a problem with, but I don't think they'll be out there that often. And they've always been in contact with me. When I'm at work, they let me know. They email me, let me know what's going on.
And when we, obviously, it just recently started with having them as employees. And we sat down, Rick and Mark and I sat down with them and kind of talked about what things we were going to handle, what things they were going to handle, and having Mark as their primary contact person. And that's kind of how we set it out from the start. But, the village administrators always been the contact when we were contractual with Green Bay. So that was, my contact, and that's why the village administrator has always served in that role. But then when we started talking about it, maybe it could be shifted to Mark rather than under me to pull, just another person out from under. But it doesn't matter. Either way, if you want to keep it under village administrator because I'm here more, There still are tasks that Mark will do, and will be primary contact with them. There are things that Rick takes and spearheads and works with them on, so that will continue to be held that way, and it's just me as their primary, and then Mark and Rick, you know, working with them on the tasks that need to get done. So either way, it would work. We just, as we were discussing it, Mark and I thought maybe it was better to have him be their supervisor in the fact that he's supervising guards and the cadets as well, and just taking on that role, and he has more interaction with them, because some of the things, like he said, he would get a call, let's say they pick up a dog that's not licensed, they would be getting in touch with him, this dog was not licensed, or we've had some issues with barking dogs at this particular residence that would be passed on to Mark for him to deal with rather than them. So there's certain tasks they do and it's things that he takes on instead of them.
And they give me their reports.
Yeah, and they all go to him so that he can follow up on unlicensed dogs or, you know, private resident issues that they, you know, that they see, he deals with a lot of them rather than our animal control people taking that on. So it's set up, I guess, slightly different than it was in the past as far as tasks and who's doing what, just because we do have a code enforcement officer now and then also using Rick, our DEO, for certain tasks as well. So, but either way, you could leave it and then see how it goes, and then it could be shifted also. So either way.
Trustee Gann?
I think it makes better sense to leave it with Mark. I mean, he's got the more intimate involvement with them. He's got to do the necessary follow-up. You know, we bring Tracy into the mix, and we should dish some things off to Mark, and Mark can dish some things off to DEO, and Mark supervises other people, so it just is a natural supervisory relationship to me. It takes one person out of the mix who doesn't need to be involved in the mix, namely the village administrator.
Mm-hmm. Any further discussion? I'd like to make an amendment that we revert back to having the animal control humane officer report to the village administrator. Is there a second?
I'll second the amendment.
Okay. Discussion on the amendment? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Roll, please. Trustee Kopisch?
No.
Trustee Gendrich?
Aye.
Trustee Green?
No.
Aye.
No.
No.
Aye.
Three, four?
I think there were four. I lost count.
Four no's.
There were four no's?
Four no's.
They were five no's.
Do over.
There were four. Three more fingers.
How many yeses?
The yeses were Trustee Gendrich.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Aye, and Trustee Zeller. Is that correct? Okay. The amendment fails. Any further discussion on the main motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Item number 12, action regarding the orientation period for Michael Malik. Is there a motion with regard to this item? You want to hear from Craig before you? I entertain a motion? Craig, you want to give some background there?
If you recall, when Mark St. Laurent retired, we promoted Dave Solison to water utility foreman, and then we had an open position, and we hired an entry-level position for a water utility operator. The individual we hired was Michael Malik. He came to us with about 3 years of experience in public works and the water utility. He's got a bachelor's degree in environmental science. And one of the reasons that we selected him over other candidates was his enthusiasm and his demeanor, being able to our perception was he'd be able to fit in very well with our group and involved with residents. Mike has been with us 6 months. That's his orientation period. What we thought when we hired him proved to be true. He's a very enthusiastic fellow, very intelligent fellow. He works very well with people. He's really learned a lot about our water utility operations. He's on call on a routine basis. rotation through the on-call process with the rest of the fellows. And besides those things, Dave and I both feel he offers some real potential for leadership opportunities in the future. Very nice individual, works well with people, and is a good fit. And so on that, for those reasons, we feel that the orientation period should be completed and he should be converted to a regular employee.
Administrator Flickie, you concur?
Yes.
Trustee Gass, yeah.
I mean, I have no problem based upon recommendation, you know, promoting him or changing his status to regular employee. I guess my question is, why do we have the distinction to begin with? I mean, observation, probationary versus regular. I mean, they're all annual employees, so you can fire them one day into it or 6 months into it or a year into it. I mean, is there a change in pay or what is it?
Basically, it's a policy that's set up in our personnel manual. We have an orientation period of 6 months. At that time, then the department head does a six-month review. He can either recommend or she can either recommend that the person continues on orientation for another 6 months, that the person is dismissed, or that the person's recommended to retain as an employee and moves into the regular employee status. So we are following that procedure. And Craig has done the six-month performance evaluation, and part of that procedure is that it comes on to Village Board for your approval.
I mean, but I would assume, I mean, I haven't looked at it for a while, but I would assume that the policy statement is very clear that once you get promoted into regular employee status, that you're still an annual employee.
Absolutely. It says that in the beginning of the manual, and it's very clear that all employees are at will.
Okay.
And that's why they don't use the term permanent employee anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yeah.
a regular employee versus a permanent, and then
that's a bad word.
Anyway, so regular is better than a permanent employee, so that's the switch to that as well.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay, I don't think we have a motion yet, do we? Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Green?
Move to approve.
Is there a second? Trustee Gendron seconds. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Pass along our congratulations and thanks to Michael. Congratulations not on being a permanent employee, though.
Right? Being a regular. Permanent.
Report discussion on updating ordinance 11.03, the definition of home occupation. Mr. Roberts.
We've had several home occupations in the year that I've had to address, even so far as to take somebody to court once. But the definitions we have here for our home occupation in the village, it just, when I broke it down, it's just saying that only family members living in the home may operate a business. They cannot use any special space for a business, and they can only sell products they have made in the home. I gave you a copy of what we had in last year, which is a little bit more detailed. Break it down. I mean, it goes even further about you can't use certain equipment like the generators to run any kind of business. You can't disrupt the normal flow of traffic coming into a neighborhood to run a home business. Size of a vehicle, if it's delivering something, can only be so big. We actually allow space and ledge, you know, no more than 20% of your space to use. I don't know if that's a big deal or not. If somebody's like building birdhouses, of course, they've got to have some room in here to build birdhouses if that's what they're making at home just to sell. Would not increase anything that increases the water utilities. We could look at to see that, you know, they're using a lot more water making whatever they're making. They're using more water. They got people coming in the house. We don't say anything about you can't have visitors or clients coming to your house, employees coming to your house. Which would make it look like a business. It's not really in our ordinance definition. So what we have in LEDSU, it breaks it down just about everything. what a regular person would look like, but you just cannot run it that way.
Did you say it's not in our current ordinance about having customers come to the home?
Nothing about signs. Well, we did have a sign ordinance, but it's not addressed in the home occupation definition. Right now, a person could put up a, say they put up a sign, though they can't. Actually, we got a house right now. I went to a picture this evening. Got a sign up for a canine kennel over on Taft Street. But that would fall on the sign ordinance, but we don't have it in here. Nothing for advertising. That's canine kennels advertising. You're not supposed to be advertising showing that this is your address to bring people to your house, or your employees are coming in and working out of the home. We have nothing in there about that. It just says family members.
Basically, the only thing that is in our ordinance specific to home occupations is the definition of home occupations. That is it. There is nothing else that addresses home occupations except for the statement that you see in your sheet. So the question to you is, do you want to allow home occupations at all? And if so, what kind? And do you want to have a more specific ordinance that addresses some of the things that Mark had just mentioned? So the ordinance is very limiting right now, which is fine.
Limiting to?
Well, if you read that definition of home occupation, that is the only thing that we have in our ordinance in regard to home businesses.
Under 1103 or under?
1103 home, it says definitions.
Okay.
And it says home occupation. That's the only thing that is not our whole, this thick book of ordinances. That is the only statement we have in regard to home occupations.
Really? I can swear I remember reading something about not being able to have clients at
parking or
in the home.
How would this have affected the bike guy?
The
fact that he was bringing clients to his home instead of leaving, going somewhere, he was bringing clients to his home. He was having trucks drop off bicycles, which he was selling out of his garage. He had a business sign up in the window that after hours he would turn it on and say, open for business, and had his hours.
But nothing of what you said is prohibited except for the sign in the window. In the sign ordinance, if you're saying...
No, he could not do that because that is not... The only thing you can sell out of your home right now with this ordinance is something that you produce in your home. So you build bird feeders. Your grandpa or the dad built bird feeders that you could sell about.
So if he built bikes in his home, he'd be okay.
If he's fixing
bikes in his home, it's not okay.
What about Avon distributors, that sort of thing?
He was bringing in brand new bicycles, and he had dozens and dozens of them hanging, as you would say, a store in his garage. He basically opened his garage up as a store. And when I went by that time and saw it, the garage door open, there were probably 10 people shopping. And he had a sign that there's light-lit neon signs saying open for business.
But technically, if he had made those bikes, he'd be okay.
But you can't make a bike.
Well, whatever. We're just using this as an example. But there could be other products that you'd actually make in your house.
Right,
or assemble in your house.
If he had somebody brought him, okay, bring home a Sears bike, put it together, and sold that, that's different. He built his house. But he put something together, he got some someplace else. It's not so much as he's actually building something from scratch. That's the thing. Home definition, as far as I know, everywhere I've worked, is basically, something you're doing in your house is a hobby that you're selling. If
right.
You build a bird house, you build a bird feeder.
He was technically a retail shop, right?
He was a retail shop.
Yeah. And I'm not disagreeing with you about what I want. I don't want, and we've heard this from neighbors all around the village, that they don't want the next door neighbor running a business out of their house and having people come and purchase things and having neon signs in the window and all that. It's a residential piece of property. It should be primarily residential. So I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying. What I'm wondering about is, according to our current ordinance, the way that it is, people could be doing a lot of things as long as they're technically making the product in their home.
Right, and even in the home definitions, home occupation definitions, or whatever, you know, that the municipalities I've worked at, that is what's understood, as long as you're making something at home, and it's family members, and you're not bringing in anything, it's just what you're making at home.
Right.
I mean, of course, you can bring your wood in, something to make burnout work, all the shipments of things coming in, but you're making something and shipping it out.
Any idea how many such businesses we have?
I've stopped three. We actually had two that were grandfathered in 20 years ago. One of them just shut down.
Which one?
The electro.
On Lavelle?
Yes, okay. She foreclosed on a couple weeks ago. And I found one Friday over on Taft Street. There's a canine kennel being run over there.
Canine? What does that mean?
Dog boarding?
Kennel.
Just a boarding kennel?
Boarding. They were complaining for
a business is not allowed in the residential.
Well, right. Neither is operating a kennel allowed in the village, correct?
Right, but a home occupation is not allowed in a residential school.
Right.
Right.
Doesn't that ordinance take care of it, what's allowed in a residential?
Zoning, you mean, from a zoning perspective?
Zoning.
However, reality, they're going on.
Well, I know.
Well, but with the zoning, what's allowed in the zone in a particular zoning designation cover things like this?
Because we had that tax, some going tax.
Oh, on Riverside.
What's your zoning?
We dealt with
also.
That.
However, Ray brings up the Avon lady at home.
They usually leave. People don't come.
People are coming and going, and then we've got the home party
Pampered
too.
Chef. Let's go with Pampered Chef. That's
Pampered Chef. There we go.
Well, there's right. Another one.
Huh? It,
31.
I guess we need some provision for those, because I guess what I'm not in favor of is making things like that illegal. I mean, that seems innocuous in a residential.
Trustee Zeller?
The electrolysis business that was at the corner of Broadway and Lytle Street had obtained a conditional use permit prior to her building her home. Mm-hmm. So she was in compliance with everything that we had set forth. And I would be supportive of the additional definitions or rules if and only if we could still provide that conditional use path of applying for their use to the village. And because, like, I spoke to the bike guide about this at length. I received phone calls, emails, people telling me that, you know, we're chasing their bike guy out of town and all this. I've had how many bikes repaired by the guy, and it never crossed my mind that this was any type of a problem that the village would get involved with. But then when you read the home occupation definitions that we have in place, it specifically addresses that new product that he was selling. So I urged him to come to the board with a conditional use permit request. I brought him all the permit application, all of the documentation, and apparently he never followed through. And I haven't never, you know, I don't know. Maybe he's still operating. I have no idea. But anyway, that avenue was there, and I would support. Stiffening this up, if we can still provide that avenue to people for a home occupation business, because that electrolysis business never bothered anybody.
Yeah, right.
But they had she had a parking lot in her driveway, and I received several calls about why can this person have a parking lot in her driveway, and I explained she obtained a conditional use permit. And that was the only way. That was the only way that house and that lot, that house was going to be built on that lot, because that lot had been for sale and had been vacant for years after the whole rest of the neighborhood had built out. So she came with a specific use and was successful, you know, in building and developing that particular parcel of land. So what I'm saying is, I want to keep that avenue of conditional use open for these types of situations where we can objectively look at it.
Yeah, I agree. I gave them the same advice. If there are avenues at the place on Libel and the other on Alloway Avenue, and I'd gone through this process years ago, and but I'm not even sure if I don't know if it's stiffening up this, but it's just making it clearer, because it's really, it's a little bit unclear as to what you really can and can't do.
Can I just make one more comment? I'm fine with leaving it just as it is as well, too.
Okay.
But, you know, if this becomes more of a problem for Mark and he really feels passionately that we need to define more what you had said, Steve, not just becoming more, more difficult for this type of operation, but defining it in certain areas that, you know, the areas like this kennel, if we want to be more specific about what type of business is, that I'd be fine with that. Or if we just leave it as is and take it on a case by case basis too, that would be fine. But is that causing you grief, Mark, because you don't have a real clear definition?
I assume it does. I mean, how can you?
The reason I did this, brought this up is Leslie. This is one we put Leslie had almost the same thing. It was just a very short paragraph, and we had some problems with people just not understanding that little paragraph. It's almost identical to what we have here right now. And I went to several municipalities in Wisconsin and looked at their home occupation and took a lot of the best ideas I thought they had out and wrote this for Leslie. Made very clear what you can and cannot do. Even had a this morning when I was working, we had a guy to talk to about this, and it actually helped because I could show him you can't do this, you can't do this. This makes it a business of what you're doing. You're bringing employees over to your house to pick up. This is lawn care, so you're bringing employees over to your house to pick up your vehicle and leaving. Can't do that. You're bringing somebody in. This is what happened up on Hilltop with Miss Acosta. She was running a home cleaning business out of there. She had two trailers, one in the backyard, one in the driveway. I came in early in the morning, watched the employees pull in, park, get out, get the vehicles. She had equipment sitting outside. We don't say anything about not having equipment. She had all her cleaning equipment sitting outside in the garage. They would bring it out, load up the trailers, take off, go to your cleaning business. She argued, ended up going to court about it. But I mean, this is what I'm seeing. But it doesn't say that you can't bring your employees over here. So that's what she was doing. They were coming in. She had five employees parking up the street, get vehicles, take off.
Seems like you wouldn't have done all this work if you didn't think it was a good idea for us to get a little bit more specific about what we're talking about. And I think if we really want compliance, and that's what we're really after, we need to be very clear as to what the rules are. And I think there are probably people running businesses out of their homes, and they may not even know that they're doing anything that's against the village ordinance. So I'm all for making things as clear as possible to residents so that they know, and as clear as possible so that when Mark has to, you know, put the hammer down on them, that he's got very clear guidelines and he can refer back to them as to why what they're doing is not in accordance with our village ordinances. Trustee Guest.
No, I think what Mark's put together from Ledgerview is entirely workable. I think it creates, you know, some clear guidance and really curtails what can be done. Under the existing ordinance, if somebody's making, you know, birdhouses and they sit there and run, you know, a power saw all day long to make them, you know, there's nothing in our ordinance to stop that. You know, but this one, you know, says you can't create noise, vibration, air fumes. I think it's already covered in here, you know, like the pampered chef kind of thing, because it talks about, you know, you can't put things on shelves, but people can pick up things, orders that they placed at a sales party, you know. So I think think that's kind of, I think it's pretty balanced.
This will actually help me also. If we have a problem over in Broadview with the guy's working on a vehicle, and he's working on a lot of vehicles. So basically, he's running a business, but I can't prove it. But just saying this little definition kind of hurts.
Yeah.
Doing what I need to do to stop him. And I mean, I can't in other ways, but this would help me so come up short and say, you're running a business. I can tell there's certain things. Man, that's what I'm talking about there. Now I went by today, and guys working on cars. He's running a business out of there. That would be a little bit better if you have him on that.
Yeah, I would recommend that we start with this, and then maybe you put it on the next board agenda to as a possible action item, and it might take us a little bit of a couple of meetings, or if it's anything like trailers, it might take us more than a couple of meetings.
A few years.
But we get started on it, and science. Again, so that we can be as clear as possible for our residents as well as for the
I'm all in favor of seasonal business uses.
Trusty Zeller.
Oh, he's on a hard surface?
Yeah. I just want to recall that we did allow, the name escapes me, the contractor that had his business on Riverside Drive that closed up next to St. Michael's Pub.
Oh, Davis. Jim Davis Construction.
Jim Davis Construction. We did allow him, by conditional use, to display his contractor sign, his business sign, at his home on St. Francis Street. So that would have to be grandfathered in as well, that action that we took. He built separate quarters to house his business in a garage next to his home. And he did so following our approval of him to conduct his business there at his home. So,
why was the permit? Because of the sign? Or did he have clients over to that?
He has clients to his garage.
Okay.
At his home,
okay.
Where the sign is displayed at the mailbox.
Yeah, I've seen the sign. A lot of people work out of their homes.
Jim Davis.
Self-employed. I mean, how do you...
And that's not... I mean, typically, you know, if you have... You're using your home for an office, and you're making calls, and you're working at your computer, that's not something that we're trying to stop. Because you don't know. You could be doing... Anyone could be doing that. And they're not bringing some of these things into the community that you wouldn't want coming in. They're strictly using their home for an office and doing their business out there and meeting with clients somewhere else.
Right.
They're doing whatever. So you could have hundreds of people doing that in their homes right now.
Right.
We wouldn't know. And that's not something we're really trying to prohibit or, you know, curtail, except when it starts impacting the neighborhood when you have customers coming and going.
Customers coming, right.
And all that stuff.
That's why I always remember that being the linchpin. You have customers at your house.
Yep.
That's always because then you increase the traffic. And
however, we do have some home businesses that have customers coming and going that are not detrimental to a residential. So
I understand that.
That's why there's a... Yeah.
I don't know how you... I mean, right? Limit the number of customers you can have at your house per week. How do you limit that?
Right.
On the one hand, you don't want people lining up outside, even if it's an accounting store. You want people lining outside with their taxes in hand.
Correct.
On the other hand, if you have customers over once a month, a customer come over to your house once a month, I mean,
exactly.
Like a visitor. All right, well, these are all arguments that we'll undoubtedly have, but I think we start here and move forward. Is that... Give you some direction, Mike?
Yes, thanks.
Clear as mud.
Well, even that concern's addressed in this one. It's nicely done. A lock occasion should not create greater vehicle or pedestrian traffic than normal.
So if you're having a couple people coming and going every once in a while, not a big deal.
Exactly.
All right, I'm moving on to number 14.
This one's easy.
Update on purchasing a residential lot at 2524 Libel Street. Tracy.
I did speak with Harry Blaney in regard to what came out of our last meeting, and what he said he would do is put the property out again for bid, and he's doing a bunch of them again. In about 3 months, he's going to put some properties out again and include that property with it. He would put a starting price of $15,000 on it, and he felt that he really wasn't comfortable going any higher than that. He said they may bid higher than that, but that's kind of his minimum price he would put out on it. If that is the case, then we would look at getting about $4,900 back, would be what we would get back towards our special assessment, with a sales price of $15,000. So that isn't exactly what you guys had approved or put as your motion in our last meeting, so that's why I just wanted to come back, update you, and see if indeed you want to revisit this, and it can come back at the next meeting and you can look at it. But at that price, that's what would be coming back to the Village Valley in special assessments.
What if it's more than that?
If it's more than that, it'll more would come back to us. So if they sold it for $17,000, then we may get like $6,000 back or whatever.
Because I know they have other special assessments on their end as well that they could.
Yeah.
But that's sort of the agreement that if they get this, the $15,000, the minimum, that we get the $4,923, and
right.
If it's anything above that, it's okay. Good. Thanks for doing that. Hopefully, we won't have to do that too much in the future.
Exactly.
Anything further? Is there a motion to adjourn? Trustee Green, second. Trustee Genridge, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Aye.